Gresham asks us to picture a Boston meeting house in 1776. Its wooden pews filled with colonists singing in fervent harmony. Their voices rise with Chester, an anthem of defiance. Let tyrants shake their iron rod, ringing like a musical call to arms. This is the sound of William Billings, who lived from 1746 to 1800, a tanner turned composer who gave America its first musical voice. As we continue, we have a chance to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in choruses around the country. And they often will be turning to Billings, a self-taught revolutionary whose choral works laid the foundation, in a sense, for American classical music. His rugged, bold melodies captured the spirit of a nation breaking free, and his legacy echoes in today's choral performances. Born in Boston in 1746, William Billings was an unlikely pioneer. Partially blind in one eye, with little formal education and a modest trade as a tanner, he defied convention to become among America's first significant composers. In the crucible of the Revolutionary War, Boston pulsed with rebellion. Taverns buzzed with patriotic songs, churches rang with psalms, and fifes and drums rallied soldiers. Billings, a singing school teacher, channeled this energy into music that was raw, accessible, and distinctly American. Unlike Europe's polished composers, he embraced a rough-hewn style, writing for ordinary colonists who gathered to sing in community. Billings was the voice of the common man, writes music historian Richard Crawford, his music as bold and unpolished as the Revolution itself. His work, rooted in the soundscape of 1776, marked the birth of a national music identity. In 1770, Billings published the New England Psalm Singer, the first collection of American choral music. This groundbreaking work broke from British hymnody by introducing fuguing tunes, lively, overlapping vocal lines that gave singers a sense of freedom and interplay. The collection's 120-plus pieces were designed to be sung more with passion than perfection. In its preface, Billings declared, "I think it best for every composer to be his own carver," a manifesto of independence that mirrored the colonies' fight for freedom. These works, like David's Lamentation, brought sacred music to life with emotional intensity, inviting colonists to express their faith and defiance through song. Today, early music ensembles like Boston Baroque perform these pieces, connecting 2026 audiences to the revolutionary spirit of 1776. Chester, from the New England Psalm Singer and the Singing Master's Assistant, became Billings' most iconic work, a patriotic anthem that captured the fervor of the Revolution. Its lyrics blended sacred zeal with martial defiance, resonating with soldiers and civilians alike. Sung in churches and on battlefields, Chester was a rallying cry, its robust melody cutting through the chaos of war. Imagine the thrill of hearing those voices unite, a chorus of rebellion against tyranny. Its enduring popularity, performed by choral groups, as we mentioned, in 2026, underscores its timeless power. Billings' influence extended beyond his compositions. His singing schools, where colonists learned to read music and sing in harmony, democratized musical education, laying the groundwork for America's choral tradition. His music, unrefined yet powerful, rejected European polish for an American ethos of independence and individuality. That from Mark Gresham, writing for Irrelevant. Joseph Stiligros is an instructor in the Department of Music, Theater, and Dance at the Commonwealth University, Bloomsburg, and he believes strongly in the importance of communal singing. He spent time conducting and lecturing in Europe, and he's taken a special interest in the place of choral singing in Hungary, grounded in the work of Zoltán Kodály, who considered it not just a key for understanding music itself, but also as a powerful instrument to create solidarity and unity. Dr. Stiligros is music director of a community choir as well, and he will lead the Bloomsburg Singers in their spring concert this Sunday afternoon. We had a chance to speak with him by phone about the way his passion for singing has taken shape and the concert in store.
I just had music all around me when I was growing up. My parents both encouraged us to sing. We sang around the dinner table. We sang folk songs. We listened to records. And it just was a natural and normal thing for people to do. I just thought that's the way everybody lived their life, through music. And so it's always been such an important part of my life. And my life has certainly gone in many different directions. And when I decided to become a choral conductor finally and formally, I had a number of just wonderful opportunities, and I just feel so fortunate to be able to do something that I really love and to share the natural and beautiful human spirit as it expresses itself through music. And to be able to share that with other singers and with an audience is one of the most blessed things a person can experience.
So it's really something that you have developed and want to teach, and I'm fascinated that you have gone abroad to teach and direct as well. And I'm curious, is the sensibility the same when you were over in, say, Central Europe? What about there and here?
Well, I've had some wonderful experiences abroad in Poland and in Italy and in Hungary. And each of those places, it's just so interesting. Each has its own really intrinsic, homegrown musical culture. And to try to describe how each country deals with music, of course, we know very well the Italians with the language of music and all of that vaunted history. But it was astonishing to me in traveling to Hungary how much music is revered. They have one of the founders of the discipline of music education. His name is Zoltán Kodály. He was Hungarian and did a lot of work with folk music in Hungary, but also established a very strong music education pedagogy. And this man, to this day, is essentially a national hero in that country. His birthday is nearly a national holiday. Everybody knows him. There are so many people who sing in choirs, and their tradition is just so powerful.
And you go and share what you bring and have the exchange through music. We often hear that sense about music is a universal language. Where do you come down on that concept?
You know, we did certainly do a lot of talking in the English language when I was over there. The wonderful natural thing that we've developed as Americans is that because of the relationships that we've built in much of Europe, the entire continent essentially speaks English as a second language. It's a requirement of the European Union. So all of my teaching was done in English. But to your direct point, much of music is about trying to express deep human emotions and figuring out how those emotions relate to the activities of daily life or to various specific issues in the culture or the society. Those are things that we understand as a musical language because we are all in this Western musical tradition. And it is essentially a universal way that people can communicate something very deep and personal and emotional through an art form that crosses the traditional barriers of, you can think of it as a spoken language.
the chorus that you have developed in Pittsburgh that is really geared toward helping in a specific way, not just lifting spirits, but there is something to the voices, the many voices, the chorus that you have established there that you believe really can make a difference in people's lives.
Well, you're talking about the Voice Givers Choir in Pittsburgh, which has as its objective to try to connect our audiences to a particular social challenge that is being faced by our community, and to help them to understand that social problem, and then motivate them to act in certain ways to help to address and redress a particular social issue. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, there was a lot of publicity about unaccompanied minors arriving at the border in the U.S. And we did a concert in support of an organization in Pittsburgh that was housing these children. And in order to do that, we invited members of that association to come to our concert, to make a presentation during the concert, to tell some of the stories of the children and the experiences that they had been having. And then we wove through that narration specific pieces of music that are about ideas like building community, or what is it like to be a child? So we sang nursery rhymes, for example, arrangements of nursery rhymes, which I can tell you have a much different meaning if you are singing them to children who've really not had the opportunity to have that kind of experience, a normal, healthy childhood with safe surroundings. So that was the objective of that concert, is to try to weave those all in, essentially using music, as we were talking a moment ago, as an emotional connection, essentially creating a dramatic flow from beginning of concert to the end, so that by the end, the audience not only understands something more about this problem in an intellectual sense, but they also are able to understand the significance and the importance of really taking concrete action in order to try to address this challenge.
You believe very strongly that it's important not just to have your singers breathing before they sing, warming up that way, but you believe in actual bodily movement. Could you talk about your belief and what the results are when singers take that seriously?
Oh, well, you know, in many cultures of the world, there is no difference between the concept of music and the concept of dance. In fact, in some cultures, there's not even a different word. They use the same word to mean both. And there is such a fundamental connection between the body and the music that comes out. And they relate in some very similar places in the brain, as scientists have discovered the way our neurology works. And so I find that when people move either around the room or sometimes just using their hands, perhaps even similar to the kinds of motions that a conductor might make, that they actually can create a better sense of musical line. They can be more uniform in their expression of rhythm, and they can be more connected physically, seriously, specifically physically, to the music that they're singing, which adds to the authenticity and the vitality of what they are trying to communicate.
Now, I'd love it if you'd introduce the various choral groups that are at the Commonwealth University of Bloomsburg.
Well, this year we've had three different choral groups. We have a soprano alto choir, we have a tenor bass choir, and then we have a mixed choir of soprano alto, tenor, and bass. So we have three different groups at the university. They are open to majors and non-majors, and they perform at various events around the northern Pennsylvania area. Sometimes we go on tour, although we didn't manage to pull that across this year. Those are the three choirs at the university at the moment.
You're about to lead a spring concert with a fascinating program. Tell us about the forces and the theme.
So this spring performance will be performed by the Bloomsburg Singers, which is the community group in Bloomsburg. It's a wonderful organization that does have some students from the university, but also has music teachers from town and community members, people who love to sing. And in putting together a program like this, the program is actually on June 14th, Flag Day, as it happens. And the topic of the program on this 250th anniversary of our nation's founding is Americana. And as I was thinking about this program, trying to put on an Americana program in a time in American history today, which is somewhat difficult. There's lots of division, internal division, harshness, disagreement, a troubled political discourse. So as I was putting the program together, I thought, you know, we should have three goals for this concert. First, we in this country have a shared cultural history, shared values that transcend those nominal disagreements of today. I know these disagreements we have today, some of them are quite significant, but if you look at them in terms of the whole scope of American history, they really just pale in comparison to our fundamental values. These were values that were fought over. People died in a revolutionary war in order to create this nation imbued with values of democracy, liberty, equality, rule of law, religious freedom. So the idea is that we will express music that extols these values. Second is to try to use our concert as a musical reminder of the incredibly difficult and challenging times that our nation has been through in the past. And at each of these times, people who felt they were treated unjustly, they worked for justice, changes were made, and the country came together again. And it's our hope that by recognizing this history, we can work to resolve some of those challenges that we face today. And then the third thing, kind of following along that idea, is that in order for us as citizens of this country to better the uniqueness that is the American nation, we'll require each citizen to serve the country and to protect it from any assault on its fundamental values. So that is the sort of the overarching themes of this concert. And we have a whole variety of different pieces that are geared to try to express that. For example, we perform a piece by William Billings, who's the first famous composer from the United States. But he wasn't a professional composer. He composed a piece called Chester, which was a Revolutionary War anthem sung in homes and public places throughout the colonies. And it was kind of a heroic piece. We're going to sing it in succession of different verses. The first verse, I'll just quote for you a little bit of the beginning of the verse. It says, "Let tyrants shake their iron rod and slavery clank her galling chains. We fear them not, we trust in God." So it's really very fundamentally imbued with the values of the United States, and it's an expression of that desire for independence and that desire to be a free and independent nation. I mean, certainly the reference to slavery was an exaggeration, but at the time it was a very real social condition. So the reference was highly motivational. The other verses of the piece talk about the siege of Boston, and it pokes fun in a certain extent at some of the British soldiers and their way of fighting the war. It's a wonderfully gripping piece composed by a composer who used a lot of the New England psalm singing tradition and combined that with the political urgency of the revolution.
You gave us an overview, but tell us a little bit more about who would be singing Chester.
Oh, it wasn't really designed for, you know, a traditional European-style concert experience. It was intended for community singing. People would sing it at home. They would sing it in public places, or when they would gather at the town square, or when they gathered in other people's homes. It was part of the New England singing school tradition, where people just sang. I mean, we don't think of that so much today, where we have radio and, you know, YouTube and all kinds of other things. People used to sing. They would gather around with each other, around the table or at the restaurant or wherever you may have it, and they would sing with each other just for fun.
Then take us to another example.
Sure, sure. Well, we have some other pieces that deal with, you know, just sort of the founding of the nation. We have some pieces from the Sacred Harp tradition. We have music of early religious America. But then we turn our direction to this idea of challenges of a nation. And there are three pieces, three separate challenges that we include in this section of the concert. We have a Civil War theme, rather a cautionary tale about the costs of war, especially with some of the struggles that we've had in this country. It's actually an arrangement from a Broadway show about the Civil War, but it's a powerful and poignant piece, not at all what we think of as stereotypically, you know, Broadway. It's called Tell My Father, about a wounded soldier actually dying as he seeks to send a message to his father that he fought bravely and fulfilled his duty. It's in a wonderful arrangement by Andrea Ramsey. It's sung by the tenors and basses of the choir together with a violin solo. And it just expresses how powerful it is to give your all for your country and what that really means. We also sing a piece about the challenges faced in this country by workers and women together. This piece is called Bread and Roses. It was an anthem of union strikers in the garment industry singing about their quest for bread, meaning, yes, they want higher wages, but also the quest for roses, too. It's like, you know, the music tells poignantly that America has always been about more than just mere sustenance. We seek a better life, a more beautiful life, a more meaningful life for ourselves and for our children. And this was a challenge they faced. And in those days, people would take action and go on strike to try to make a difference for themselves. This piece is sung by the sopranos and altos of the choir and is just a very effective way of expressing that, yes, this was a challenge, but they sang, and they sang together this particular piece of music to help hold them together and keep their movement unified.
And the same could be said then of the civil rights movement and music too, right?
Well, that's our third challenge, is the challenges of racism, and which has gone on in this country, obviously, for a very long time. And so we can't really cover the whole history of that, but we're singing a piece called The Freedom Train by a composer from Philadelphia, Rollo Dilworth. And the incredible thing about the suffering of the experience of racism is that often the music of the African-American community is an art that is filled with incredible joy. So we sing this about the Freedom Train. It's all aboard, just get on board. It's an exciting piece that combines several different civil rights songs together with an overwhelming message of unity and freedom. And it's all inclusive. It's all aboard. We are all one, a community who celebrates together. And it's the kind of piece that reminds us that in order to solve very real differences, we should really maintain a joyful countenance and recognize that what we're all working toward is an America of fairness and freedom and equality. And we may disagree about how to get there, but we should keep an eye on the big picture of what a wonderful country we have and how lucky we are to be part of it. So the last section of the concert is called Americana, and it talks about the preservation of the uniqueness in the United States. And one of the pieces we sing has a text by Benjamin Franklin, actually more of an apocryphal story, I think, maybe than anything else. But he was asked after the Constitutional Convention and the founding of the American nation, so what is this that we've created here? And he responded, well, it's a republic, if you can keep it. And that is the title of this wonderful new piece by Kyle Peterson. It was just written last year. And it uses quotes by Theodore Roosevelt and some great American statesmen to express this idea that, yes, it's a republic, it's wonderful, but it's only as good as the work that we all do to keep it vital, that it's a responsibility for everyone to pitch in together and try to solve that challenge that we face today. This section also includes some music by Randall Thompson, an excerpt from his powerful Testament of Freedom, which sets texts by Thomas Jefferson. These are as vibrant and vital today as they were when he wrote them. And we close the concert with Aaron Copland's uplifting Promise of Living, taken from his Americana opera called The Tenderland, which contains this rather universal message that the promise of living with hope and thanksgiving is born of our loving our friends and our neighbor. So it's just a wonderful piece. It's accompanied by two pianists, so it's a very rich accompaniment, and it is the conclusion of his opera, which we thought would make a very fitting conclusion to our concert program with a really uplifting and unifying theme.
Well, it sounds like this is a concert that is going to be able to do everything that you spoke with us about at the beginning. We then would like to know how we can join you.
Yes, we're really excited to share this wonderful music and this celebration with our audience. So please come and celebrate with us. The concert is Sunday, June 14th. It's at 3 p.m. at Wesley United Methodist Church in Bloomsburg, right on Market Street, the corner of Market and Third. We hope everyone will come and join us. And by the way, if you're listening and you happen to be a person who likes to sing in the car or on the way to work or in the shower in the morning, whatever, if you like to sing, check us out and see what you think. We are a welcoming group and would be happy to have more singers.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. As we go marching, marching, we battle too for men. For they are women's children, and we mother them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses.
The King's Singers here with an arrangement of Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses will be one of the pieces on the spring concert Americana, a Flag Day reflection on American identity, to be presented this Sunday afternoon, and that's Sunday, June 14th at 3 in the afternoon, by the Bloomsburg Singers under the direction of our guest today on Art Scene, Dr. Joseph Stoller-Gross, who is instructor in the Department of Music, Theater, and Dance at the Commonwealth University, Bloomsburg. In addition, there will be Chester, and that's the rousing anthem by William Billings. There will be many other pieces from Broadway, the Civil War, the touching, moving arrangement of the piece about the lad who had fallen and is asking his fellows to let his father know that he fought with integrity and pride. That's Americana, a Flag Day reflection on American identity, at Wesley United Methodist Church, 130 West 3rd Street in Bloomsburg, this Sunday, June 14th at 3 o'clock. Admission is free. It's the Bloomsburg Singers under the direction of Dr. Joseph Stoller-Gross. And for more information on the web, bloomsburgsingers.org, bloomsburgsingers.org.
For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses.